Shut up. Put it on Triple M. For Ream hot water heaters, solar, continuous flow and storage hot water, Ream is Australia's favourite. Install a Ream.
Welcome to the Sunday Rub. Triple M rocks football.
For McDonald's, Triple M rocking football from down here in Blundstone Arena in Tasmania, of course, Hobart region. It is a blowy day, gusting 70 kilometres an hour as we speak. No rain in sight, so from that point of view, should be good. Big day of footy ahead. North Melbourne in a home game down here, taking on the in-form West Coast Eagles. James Hird to join us just in a couple of moments. We look forward to speaking with the Essendon coach. And boy, were they a touch ordinary in the first half last night. We're going to speak to Paul Connors, the manager of Chris Judd, as well. Adam Simpson, West Coast coach. And the new coach, the fill-in coach there of North Melbourne, Darren Crocker, will also join us as well. Got the duck shoot and tell me something I don't know a little bit later on, but this is the Rub for Ream Hot Water Heaters and, of course, our great friends at McDonald's. Wayne Carey is joining us. Wayne Swass is joining us. Jay Clark is joining us. And, Duck, I know you wanted the big introduction, but I'm just going to give you... This is Wayne Carey. Welcome.
G'day, boys. Good to be here, listeners. Nice day down here in Tassie. Bit blustery. Tricky conditions here today, so... Be a very interesting game to see how both these sides handle it. But it's been a big weekend in footy again, hasn't it?
Why? What's caught your fancy, Duck?
Oh, well, I think the Bombers' performance has been the big talking point of the weekend.
And the Tigers and on a positive note.
On a positive note, exactly. The Tigers were terrific. That's the best I've seen the Tigers play.
What about you, Swatter?
All of the things that you've just said, and also I think, you know, the terribly sad news out of this weekend is looks to be a career-ending injury to Chris Judd. Not the way that a champion deserves to go out, but sometimes, BT, we don't get the choice of when we go.
Jay-Z, Jay Clark from the Herald Sun also with us, as he is every Sunday afternoon, doing a bit of moonlighting on other little spots
sure
here and there,
like
but
it, Brian.
We get his full attention for a couple of hours.
We get his good stuff, too.
I'd like to help out the whole Triple M family, fair to say, BT. And I know the big story was a Juddy. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But what about the big tick for Johnny Barker? So they were better against Sydney first up, and then yesterday against Adelaide, they produced that spirit, that intensity, that commitment that's been lacking from Carlton. So I think it's a big tick for him and the Blues.
I don't think it's a big tick. I think it's a little tick. And let's check in 5 weeks' time and just see whether we're still ticking off there because, you know, it can build for a game or two, that new excitement around a new coach, I reckon.
They were good, and I don't think I think just about all of Australia were going for Carlton. Now, you don't often say that, but I think a lot of people felt sorry for them. I was glued to the TV yesterday.
I was watching the game last night. I was there, as you guys were, and we were watching the Bombers go at it, and we were flabbergasted, really, with their first half of football. I think the supporters, big crowd there again last night, were a little bit shell-shocked about what they saw in the first half. Their coach, James Hird, is now joining us on Triple M Football. Hirdy, good afternoon and welcome. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Brian.
What were you thinking come halftime, Hirdy, after what you'd seen?
Yeah, well, the second quarter was a very disappointing quarter of football from our team. I thought that in the first quarter we actually played the game reasonably well. We just missed our shots at goal, and then our players dropped their heads to a certain extent with those shots at goal, which is not great. But defensively and in transition, when we lost the ball, we certainly weren't up to the standard, and our turnovers too, with our ball movement, the way we gave the ball back to Geelong and allowed Harry Taylor to play such an important part in the game was certainly not what we wanted.
Hurdy, did you get a sense leading into the game? How was training during the week? Could you get a feeling from the group that perhaps this sort of performance was coming?
Not really. I thought we trained pretty well on Thursday. We trained better this week than we probably did last week. So, you know, going into the game, I thought we looked pretty good. And our first quarter effort was definitely there, but the second quarter, it wasn't.
Hurdy, it's been a long time since Pig, Jimmy and Roo Boy, mate.
It has, mate. It's a very good show, that one.
That was a great show. Award-winning show, actually, right here on Triple M. Hey, Hurdy, I want to ask you, we were talking about this on Friday night. Do you feel compromised in any way, the way you deal with the players right now in the present and at all at the end of the year when it comes to making hard decisions?
Compromised in what way?
Compromised in the way that the loyalty that the players have shown you and obviously in reverse.
No, I don't feel compromised. You know, you make decisions based on people's performances and the way they play, the way they train. Our players have actually performed very well for the majority of the year. You know, we've lost very close games, and the second quarter on the weekend was definitely last night was definitely our worst quarter. And you know, performances out of last night will result in players not playing. But that's the first time, really, this year that I've felt the team haven't turned up to play or let themselves down in terms of effort and the way you want to play as a football team.
Hurdy, Jay Clark here. It seems as if the black cloud, which has hovered over Essendon, is back in a sense. And last night there was no spark in your side. Can you put that down in any way due to the Asada Wada probe that's going in the background?
Jay, I mean, I look at the year. You've got to look at the year in totality and what's happened in terms of the year. And a three-quarter time against Sydney, I think every Essendon supporter would have been very proud of the way the players performed and probably, you know, thought it was quite remarkable the way they performed. And I can only give you my personal view. I was you know, astonished, astounded by the way they performed. After the Hawthorn game, beating Hawthorn, I thought this group had come through, you know, probably the worst times in football for any group and performed exceptionally well. But where we sit at the moment, and after the wider decision after the Fremantle game, the players have been through such a journey that I feel that, you know, perhaps you're right to a certain extent, that cloud has come back over them and is, you know, causing a bit of fog around their brain and their decision-making in a game. And that's not specifically, they don't run out there thinking about WADA, but when you go through a journey like these guys have for 2 or 3 years, and then you know that this journey has got and maybe another year to go, it makes it harder rather than easier to play AFL football. So I look at the way we played the first 3 or 4 weeks and couldn't have been prouder of those players. But once that decision came down again after the Fremantle game, we probably have taken a few backward steps.
Does any
in our brains, but it doesn't. It's no excuse for what's going on. And Essendon supporters don't really want to hear about WADA or Asada anymore. The players don't. And to me, and this is what we spoke about after the game as a group, the only way out of what we're in is now winning games of football. These players want to be remembered for as a playing group that plays competitive football, that wins games of football. And that is what they'll be trying to do. So we can talk about WADA and Asada all we want. Mm. It's not going to help us play football.
So,
and all these players want to do is perform on the field. So it's not a sense of loyalty. They don't owe me anything. I don't owe them anything. But what they owe themselves is to play and train to the best of their ability.
So right now, that resilience you've spoken about before is being tested. Do you sense that's faltering or is as strong as it's ever been?
It's not faltering, but it does get tested every day. It gets tested all the time. And the fact that you know, these players have gone through something that no one else has, but they've got to go out and perform week in, week out because that's what the game demands. And if they don't, well, you know, the players who don't won't play because the Essendon Football Club needs players who play week in, week out to the best of their ability.
Hurdy, not in terms of effort, because I totally agree with you. I think the effort has been there other than maybe in that first half last night. But what about game style? I mean, you know, you're playing a terrific game style in the first part of the year. And then all of a sudden, it seemed as if there was a massive shift in the way you were playing. And that has then correlated into obviously not winning matches of footy.
Yeah, we certainly haven't changed the way we want to play. I think that what we have or what we're not doing is using the ball well. We're not using the ball at all well. We're turning it over and our skill level is lower than AFL standard. I've spoken about it a lot in post-game for the last 3 or 4 weeks and also with the players, and we've certainly ramped up our skill work as opposed to our game style training to get that better. But the way we want to play the game is still the same way as we started the year, but it's just not getting executed to the best of our ability as players. And you know, when you look at your coaching and you say, well, what do we have to change in terms of the way we're teaching our guys or the message we're getting through at training and in games as well? Because it's not just about players not executing. You know, as a coaching group, that we have to take a large level of responsibility for the way we're performing as well.
Just a little bit of that coaching, Hurdy. I noticed with interest last night, you look like you really enjoy giving the players direct feedback from the bench and you look like you really get your point across. What brought about the change of that halfway through the game last night to rotate that and bring Mark Harvey down and put yourself back upstairs?
I think, you know, definitely down the bench you don't see as much of the game as you do upstairs. And you need to know what's going on in the game and know why things are happening. I felt after the North Melbourne game, went down to the bench for the Brisbane game, and it worked really well in terms of communication, getting my point of view across to the players. But when the game was where it was at half time, it was more about, right, where can we improve as a team? What's going on, you know, in terms of out on the ground, not just the communication side of it. So it was more important to be upstairs and have a more of a tactical view of the game.
Hurdy, when you are downstairs, why don't you have contact with the box?
Oh, I do. Yeah, okay. I have plenty of contact with the box. I have all the stats there. I have a computer there with all the stats, our KPIs. And I'm talking to the box probably every minute to 30 seconds.
Oh, okay.
So excuse my ignorance, Hurdy, but are you going back upstairs to the box to make moves, or are you entrusting somebody upstairs in the box to make those decisions and you're focusing more on that one-on-one conversation when players are coming on and off the ground?
Both. Every move that, you know, goes on will go through me. Not every move is my idea. I don't think every senior coach would say that every move is their idea, but if someone's moved or if a tactic's there, that'll either come through me or it'll come from me, even when I'm on the bench.
Hurdy, just before we wrap up, mate, Brendan Goddard, how do you think he's travelling at the moment? There's been a bit of criticism about his ball use, but he's been more inside, has he not?
Yeah, he's played more inside since we played Fremantle. We've put him inside more, and he's been our best clearance player since we've done that. He certainly, you know, played a pinch hit role across halfback at certain times, but we want him around the contest, particularly when Job's not there. The big bodies are the ones that, you know, get the ball out and start your game. I've been happy with Brendan. He's not going to do everything right. He's going to make some mistakes, but in terms of his performances this year, he's one of our players who have got in and, you know, made things happen when the game hasn't gone our way. But yeah. Every player makes mistakes, and I just want Brendan to give his all every week, which he, you know, he does. He's a very passionate person who works his backside off to be the best player he can be.
Appreciate your time, Hurdy. Good luck for the remaining part of the year.
Thanks, guys.
James Hurd joining us on Triple M Football, explaining some of the performance last night. Jay-Z, what did you glean out of what Hurdy had to say?
Yeah, very interesting. Pretty candid, I thought. The fog is back, he said at Essendon. Their resilience is being tested and, you know, the mentality clouded. And we saw that last night in terms of the skills, not up to AFL standards. So pretty blunt on there.
I reckon it's up to Hurdy. And he was doing his absolute best there to sort of quell any sort of hysteria about, you know, the dark clouds, and I know he mentioned it in one sentence, but he's also sort of trying to address it and bring it back to quarter by quarter. What he says about the first half is probably right. In the first quarter, they did. I think Danaher missed four shots at goal in the first quarter. They could have easily been three goals apiece in that first quarter, and the second quarter was pretty disastrous. But after half time, they started to get back into the game a little.
But D, what did you make of Hurdy's body language when that was happening? You know, he didn't seem to be, you know, overt. You know, he was still quite introverted in that moment.
You're saying he looked a bit disconnected,
maybe calm. I don't know.
He's a cool cat.
I wanted to see a bit more.
Hurdy's cool. He doesn't. I think that's the way he played footy.
Yep.
He was always had his emotions in check, and that's the way he goes about coaching. So I think that's his makeup. And you know, Paul Roos is the same. You don't often see Roosie, the man coaching today. Adam Simpson is very cool.
Well, we've just seen something remarkable
West Coast
here.
Late. That was West Coast, wasn't it?
No, that wasn't West Coast. Sorry? Just walking on the ground in front of us here down at.
There's a lot of people, Bunstone. Brian.
There were 17 people. Guess which team
it
was.
Now,
wasn't West Coast that getting off the bus? It was
the umpire.
Yeah. Oh, really? There were 17 people dressed in grey from the Umpire Society that were walking down here in front of us with their little clip bags all off the bus. 17 of them. It was amazing.
Is that little razor?
That was Razor Ray, and I see Geordie Bannister and Lee Fisher there as well.
Little Razor looking up into the stands. He's soaking in the atmosphere of this stadium.
Where we sit at the moment, and after the wider decision after the Fremantle game, the players have been through such a journey that I feel that, you know, perhaps you're right to a certain extent, that cloud has come back over them and is, causing a bit of fog around their brain and their decision-making in a game.
That was James Hird just a couple of moments ago on Triple M Football describing last night's performance with the Sunday Rub team, which features Wayne Carey, Wayne Swash, Jay-Z, Jay Clark, myself, Brian Taylor. Shortly, we're going to speak with Paul Collins, the manager of Chris Jard. That was the bad luck story. Yep. The horror story out of the weekend was to see a champion like that go off on the stretcher for what we think is probably the last time. Let's have a listen to how the Triple M team saw it yesterday.
Dangerfield and Judd. Oh, Judd.
Turn back the clock, Jimmy.
Yeah. Turn back the clock. Just had the better of the danger.
I think he's caught one a bit high.
He's hurt his knee. I think.
Oh, he's not looking good, Chris Judd.
He can't move. He knows.
This is not good.
No. I've never seen Chris Judd like this.
He's in a lot of pain.
He has not. His left leg hasn't moved. Yeah, let's get down to you, Doc. What are you seeing?
JB, this doesn't look good. He pivoted as he came down from that marking contest on that left knee, and that's putting the cruciate under a lot of stress, JB.
So that was the way the Triple M team saw it yesterday at the MCG. The way they read it and the way Doc Grow and White described it then was spot on. It is a reconstruction job, Jay-Z.
Yeah, and when you can almost sense that he knew, you know, as he comes off the ground, he gives the wave to the crowd, almost going to be one of the iconic photos of the season. You could almost sense then that we all knew that was the last time we're going to see
and
Chris
Judd. And I see Luke Ball in today's media saying, oh, give him time to decide what he's doing and back off. No, he has already basically said, no, that's it for me by waving goodbye. He doesn't need time. I mean, it's a ACL and the chances of him coming back are nil, aren't they?
Oh, it would take something extraordinary. He's got to go through a year of recovery and then, battle on in the back half of a second season in a rebuilding Carlton. It's just not going to happen. So it's time to celebrate, what a champion career that Chris Judd's had. And
what about Lars? A quick fix? Could be back at the start of next year?
I wouldn't have thought so, BT. No? But at the end of the day, sitting here discussing it, it's up to him. He'll make that decision. I agree with Jay-Z. I think we celebrate what has been a marvellous career. I thought Robert Harvey was the best on-baller of the 90s, and Chris Judd took that baton and ran with it and was certainly, I think, the best on-baller in my time. Gary Ablett has since taken that baton towards the end of Chris's career, taken that baton and run with it. And now we see Nate Fyfe taking it off Gaz and running with it. And he's just been a marvellous player on and off the ground, a marvellous person. I've thoroughly enjoyed watching him play. And every time I've seen him play, I just get thorough enjoyment out of it.
Let's have a listen to what Chris Judd had to say this morning to Triple M's Damien Barrett.
Chris, I dare say you must be shattered with what happened yesterday.
Yeah, it was disappointing. Never nice to get a serious injury. But that's footy.
It seems as though you knew straight away that the impact that had been sustained was the maximum one.
Yeah, I had a pretty good inkling straight away that it was an ACL. I'd sort of done a medial ligament before, and the feeling was just a bit different to that. So really sharp pain at the start, and after the first 20 seconds, not incredibly painful after that.
The acknowledgement of the crowd as you were being taken off on the motorised stretcher, was that a farewell?
Oh, look, I think the main thing now is to just take a deep breath, sit down and have a chat with the club and have a chat with my family and then, I guess, make a call, sometime this week.
What's the procedure from here? Do you have to wait for the swelling to go down before the operation?
Yeah, I haven't met with the surgeon yet. And there's not really a sense of urgency. I think it's almost better to wait 7 to 10 days before you actually operate so that the swelling has gone down a bit. So I'll probably meet with the surgeon, towards the end of this week and probably sometime next week get the operation done.
When you say surgeon, I'm assuming it's going to be the traditional reconstruction, not the Lars?
Yeah, well, that's the idea. But as I said, I haven't met with the surgeon yet. So there are things to discuss with him, but I would presume so.
Yeah. Would you consider Lars?
It'll be based on what the surgeon thinks is likely to deliver the best outcome. So there'll really be discussions I'll have with him.
Yeah. And as we sit here today, and obviously you've already said there's so much to get through before you make a final decision, but do you feel possible that you might be playing in 2016?
Yeah, look, as I said, now's just the time to take a deep breath. suck it all in and have a think about things when you've got as much information as possible.
So they are the words of Chris Judd this morning. Well done to Damo. They're getting hold of Juddy as well. And pretty adamant that the operation is the operation. He's going to have that anyway. Even if he doesn't play, he needs to get the knee fixed so he can continue with resume normal life, so to speak.
And that'll be a successful business career, you'd think. Maybe some footy media. I don't think we'll see him at Clubland, Chris Judd, as invaluable as he has been to the Carlton Footy Club since he arrived here from West Coast. I think that his second season, fellas, if you think about him, the impact he made early in his career, you know, Gary Ablett probably been better in the back half of his career, but it was Judd who made the impact in his first 100 games, probably the best 100 games. I mean, that in that second season against Brisbane, he goes out and kicks 5 goals in the first half. Lee Matthews says, that's the most complete performance I've ever seen. And that was in his second season. He's won a premiership in his 6th season and a Brownlow, I think, in 2004, wasn't it, as well? So it was really that start to his career that was just so scintillating.
He's an out-and-out champion. Yeah, and that word sometimes gets thrown around too easily. Yeah. He fits it perfectly.
He's had a long-time manager. Paul Connors has been his manager for his entire career and really looked after him and done a great job with him along the way. Paul Connors, I speak of. Jakey, welcome to you, mate. You there?
Yes, Brian, you got me?
Yes, mate. I know you're at an under-18 game. You're currently watching the championships, aren't you?
Yeah, the Vic Country boys are smashing Vic Metro, which won't make the recruiters happy because they were hoping they'd get something out of Vic Metro, but it's an eight-goal lead to Vic Country in the third quarter, BC. Yeah,
haven't seen a new Chris Judd there anywhere you can get on your books, have you?
They're here, but I was just going to laugh. He was pretty easy to manage. Or he has been, yeah. So, no, he didn't have to do too much of Chris.
Where were you when you found out the news? Were you at the game, Paul?
I wish I was, but I was on the couch just watching with my two boys and getting ready to head down to Torquay. And, so it certainly wasn't great, was it?
Would you be surprised if he did play on, Paul?
I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Has he given you an inkling of what he might do after footy, Paul?
Yeah, certainly, Wayne. He's certainly not going to be coaching. And, you know, he hasn't coveted the media during his footy career, but he's had his first time ever, he's joined the footy show as a regular this year. I think he may dabble in the media if he decides to retire, but certainly business and business interests are where he's really strong and what will, you know, he always talks about a career, you know, his footy career and then a second phase to his life, and that'll be a business, you know, route, I think, for Chris.
Paul, he's made a massive impact culturally at Carlton, although it probably hasn't panned out the way he would have liked without a grand final. And we know he's a very competitive person, but if I can take you back to that decision, he had some clubs to choose from, Melbourne, Essendon, Carlton, Collingwood. Can you tell us just how difficult a decision that was for Chris Judd when he arrived in Melbourne?
Yeah, it was difficult. There's a lot of changes now. There's free agency involved. There's the ability to go in the national draft that wasn't available to Chris, which is, let's say, a route some players have taken, such as Luke Ball got taken in the national draft. You just don't have to go to the pre-season. But he took his time. He wanted to be involved with something from the bottom up. And, he just thought it was the right decision. But he was coming home. He'd won a premiership, so I think that had sat well with him. But he just wanted to enjoy life in Melbourne. He certainly was able to lead a less high-profile life in Melbourne, if that makes sense, because Western Australia, BT from, but, you know, he couldn't go to the movies or the beach or anything in WA. So he's happy to be home with his family and friends, although he had a wonderful time in Perth.
Hey, Paul, would you, like, when the dust settles and he's had time to sort of reflect and gather his thoughts, will you actively go and talk to him about, you know, what the next decision's going to be, or you let him do that and he'll come to you and you'll sit down and have a chat about it?
Well, it's all come quick. That's Swatter, is it, Swatter?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all come very quickly. We were going to sit down after the bye and map out a way forward for whether we were going to play next year, what the future held. So it's all being brought forward somewhat. So I'll still sit down with him and we'll map out if it is is he wanting to play on? And if it is, you know, does Carlton want to have him next year? That's the other thing. And Two, you know, what else does he want to be involved with? But if it's a business router, he's probably got me covered there, sadly.
Paul, you really hit the jackpot in 2001 with Hodge, Ball and Judd, didn't you? Yeah, that's basically set you up for the next decade.
Look, it was nice. I always say that Steve Green, who's the son of Russell, was very kind to me. I don't even think Chris met with any other agents at that stage. It's a bit different to what I'm seeing here at Skilled Stadium down at Geelong. There's about 38 agents and we're all trying to talk to parents and trying to sign the next Wayne Swasson, Wayne Carey.
Well, just one before we go, Paul. So
yep.
you'll catch up with Juddy at some stage, I'm sure. What's your advice?
Yeah, definitely.
What is your advice going to be to him, do you think?
Oh, my advice is simple. He's got nothing to prove. So don't think you have to come back and prove something. If you feel like you've given it your all and you're okay, you do what your heart says. And, you know, he'll be supported either way. But, you know, even throughout his whole career, I really haven't had to give him too much advice. I've always pinch myself when he's asked for advice, actually. So I'll just be there, and if he asks opinion, that's what I'll be telling him.
And lastly, Paul, you're a manager to another superstar, Adelaide's Patrick Dangerfield. You're expecting a decision from him at the end of the year on what he will do?
I've done pretty well to avoid talking about Patrick Dangerfield, I think. So, look, as I said before, he's really private and feels uncomfortable talking about his contract publicly. But no, it's not like contract talks are off. He gets on really well with David Noble. He's playing like a committed person to the Adelaide Footy Club, and that's what someone said. When you've got a contract, you commit to that contract, and he'll make up his own mind in the second half of the year.
Appreciate your time. Go and find the next one.
Thank you, BT. Insane.
Yeah, big game of footy last night for the Cats, a 69-point win. We've had a chat with James Hird. We have a chat now with one of the Cats stars, Stevie J, fresh off the back of a big win. Welcome, Stevie. Well done. Good win last night.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, well, it was a good win. Our form's been a little bit patchy this year, and we expected a big game last night. We expected it to be probably a little bit closer than what it was, but I thought we played a really good game, and it was nice to get a good win.
Stevie J. Clark here, mate. Is it right that Chris Scott really put it on the midfielders in particular to win the contested ball this week? Because I think you've only won the contested ball count 5 out of the last 17 games, but is it right that Scotty really put it on you guys to win that last night?
Well, I guess it's always one of the focus areas of the team. If you can get the contested possession win in the midfield, it goes a long way to winning most games of footy, and we have been really down in that area. I think we've been almost rated last in the competition, which is something that we're probably not used to in times gone by. But, I thought early on in the game last night, those guys were able to do that and get it forward and give our forwards plenty of opportunities.
Joe Danaher kicked 4 behinds in the opening quarter, Stevie Jane. It looked from the media boxes that the Bombers dropped their heads a little bit. Did you sort of sense that whilst you were out in the ground?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Certainly the scoreboard didn't reflect how even the game was in the first quarter. I thought they were right in the game, and obviously missing goals does hurt a little bit. But again, I thought at quarter time we needed to just go back in, focus on putting the pressure on, which was probably the biggest focus area for us pre-game, because they are a dangerous side when they get up and running. They've got some very skillful players. So I think our main focus was to try and shut them down, slow them from getting those ball entries into the likes of Joe Danaher and Carlisle. And yeah, I thought we'd done that pretty well.
Hey, Stevie, you've got one of the best trick bags in the AFL. You do the magical things. I want to ask you, though, this year, has Chris asked you to put the tricks bag away a little bit?
Oh, maybe a little bit, Duck. I think early on in the year, I wasn't playing my best footy. I wasn't playing close to my best footy, to be honest. But I was having some quieter games, and you can put up with that sometimes if I can do a few special things. But I wasn't able to do that either. So he said, just go back to playing basic footy. When you get the hands on the ball, try and do something really quick, take the first option, and that stuff will flow on from that. So that's something I've tried to do, and I guess a few of those tricks have gone away. Hopefully
Bring him back out, Steve.
Bring him back, I'll bring him back on later in the year if we get to the final.
Stevie, what was your reaction earlier in the year when Chris Scott tapped you on the shoulder and hand passed you the Kermit suit?
Well, you just got to take it on board. Obviously, I'd be lying if I said I was happy with it. and I don't think it's a reaction he'd expect from me either. But that's just the way the game's going. I think whether it be form or guys needing a rest at certain stages, you've got to take your turn and deal with it the right way. And that's what I did. I was the hardest thing about being the sub is you're on the ground. You know you're playing, and you think you can influence the play, but you're just not allowed to run out there. So I'm hoping that rule is scrapped at the end of the year, or even beforehand, if possible.
Will be.
Bit of byplay in the last quarter, Stevie. Jake Melksham likes to get the jukes up. I saw you shape up, doing throw a couple of shadow boxes, shadow punches. Who'd win?
Well, I think he's done a bit of boxing in his time, hasn't he? So
he's lethal.
Look, anyone can be tough and start shadow boxing on the ground because you know that the player can't do anything. I'm glad I didn't run into him in the car park.
Stevie, perhaps before we let you go, I don't think we've heard from you just what the situation was with the GWS trade offer late last year. Now, is it right you were just having a quiet dinner perhaps in Las Vegas or Los Angeles when the call came through from your manager? Was that offer, was that genuine?
I wasn't having a quiet night. I was in LA and I was about 4 in the morning, JB. I really can't remember too much about it. But it wasn't a genuine offer. I think they just wanted to have a chat, see where I was at. Certainly nothing was tabled to me. It was just getting a bit of a view of where I'm at and what I'd like to do, you know, footy and post-footy. So nothing official whatsoever. There was a lot made of it, but it was quite embarrassing, really, the amount of years and the dollars that were being thrown around.
Well, Stevie, congratulations last night. 5-5 the Cats now. Got Port Adelaide over in Adelaide, which should be a cracking game next week before you eventually have the bye. And also got Melbourne down at your home ground as well prior to the bye in round 13. Well done. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. All right. Thanks, guys.
Stevie Johnson there joining us on Triple M Football. We're here at Blundstone Arena. A bit blowy. The Eagles have arrived, gone out, having a bit of a look. And it's one of those days, Duck, at this ground that as a player you just need to go out and feel what the weather's doing in all parts of the venue, don't you?
You certainly do, because it's very blustery, blowing to one end fairly strongly, but then you look up at the flag and it can be blowing the other way. So it is swirly. Tough conditions, BT. You know, we said before coming here today, when it's raining, not too windy, you can sort of handle that. But these conditions, you wouldn't want to overuse it today.
Well, and yeah, I'll be interested to see how that pans out too, because they got Josh Kennedy, you know, one of the probably the most informed key forward in the game at the moment, the Coleman Medal leader. So just see what sort of delivery he gets today.
Playing injured too.
Yeah, I wonder how close that decision got to whether or not they do put him under the knife, or the fact that he's decided to play on.
Big discussion point this week about injuries and playing with injuries. He's one that has decided to hold off on surgery and is performing.
Also going to talk shortly about the spectacular 4 in a row job from the Tigers and nobbling the Premiership favourites on Friday night on their home track over at Domain Stadium. Remarkable game of football from the Tigers. Also, just want to cover off on something earlier. Mm. We credited an interview that Damien Barrett did with
Chris Judd.
Yep. We should have credited that with Channel 9. Apparently, that was the Sunday footy show.
There we go.
And Damien Barrett working for them. So there you go. Thanks to the Channel 9 Sunday footy show for that audio of Chris Judd earlier. We are going to talk with the West Coast coach here, Adam Simpson, right now. They are on an absolute roll at the moment. They have won 6 in a row. Great win last week over in Perth against Geelong. And Adam joins us. Adam, appreciate your time. Congratulations on the season so far.
Thanks, boys.
What are your first thoughts? You're here. You're in a shirt out there. It's freezing cold. It's about 8 degrees. It's windy. You peruse the ground. What are you thinking?
Well, it's actually not that cold, but it is windy. And we trained here yesterday. And look, to describe the ground, it's in great condition. It's like an outdoor Etihad, really. Looks like a similar size as well. But that wind looks like a 2-3 goal breeze, so we might have to adjust a few things.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Simo. Do you have to adjust when it's windy like that? I mean, surely you wouldn't want to overuse the ball today.
I suppose it's the type of risk you take with your ball movement that sometimes people don't take into account the breeze, and we don't want turnovers that you know, in the middle of the ground and all those sort of things. So I'll probably leave it up to the players, but there does there's a tipping point with it, and I'm not quite sure if it's there yet, but it looks pretty breezy.
Hey Simo, the way you've played this year, obviously last year and then going into the start of this year, the fact that you've missed so many and lost so many defenders, is that a byproduct now, you being more attacking because of the fact that you have to be?
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I suppose round three we played Fremantle and there was 10 goals kicked before we scored. So, and there's no doubt we had to be a little bit more braver with the ball and take the game on and get on the front foot. So that's been a big focus of ours. But the team defence element of our game is probably built on, you know, the collective. And when we lost the Eric McKenzie and Brown early in the year, we had to get some key defenders to step up. But I think our midfield's become better defensively as well. And no doubt if you move the ball well and get deep entries, you can defend better. So sort of all, you know, connects with each other, to be honest.
Adam, it's Jay Clark here. Josh Kennedy having a phenomenal season at the top of the Coleman medal leaderboard. Can you just clear up for us whether he does need surgery on that elbow of his and how much pain he's in at the moment, because he's just playing sensationally.
Oh, look, that was misreported, to be honest. It was he had an elbow that potentially needed surgery. There was an option there to rest him for 5 to 6 weeks or play at risk, and we decided to take the risk, and it's come off. It's been over 5 weeks, so I don't think it's as strong as his other arm, but you know, we think we've avoided surgery, and look, he's played pretty well in the last 4 or 5 weeks, so hopefully he can continue the form.
Hey Simo, there seems to be an ongoing conversation, certainly in the eastern states, about Nick Natanui. He's a terrific player, great highlights, but doesn't seem to take enough marks, depending on who you listen to. From the coach's perspective, how do you see his season unfolding?
Well, I don't really take marks into account with Nick. I mean, you know, if he takes a mark he took last week, we'll take them. But, look, I don't think it's the number one priority part of his game. Of course, we'd like him to get a bit more of the ball around the grounds, but if he has 14 to 18 possessions and, you know, 11, 12 of them are contested and he has 8 or 9 clearances and has real impact on the game, I think the marks, you know, it's a bonus. It's not number one priority. I'm not quite sure what an average mark for a ruckman is around the competition, but I'm not too worried about it.
What about the pressure in the forward line? Is that the almost a central cog in your match plan, Simo? It just seems that you're really pressing the ball forward. It's spending a lot of time up there, and you're scoring a lot from those entries.
Yeah, we've got to get in there for a start, and I think our midfielders in particular have found a way to get ascendancy across the middle, and we're getting pretty good numbers in terms of inside 50s. We do have a good pressure forward line. It's something I inherited when I got here with Kennedy and the likes who enjoy the defensive part of the game, and there are some forwards out there who don't enjoy it, so it's a bonus for us, and we continue to tell our players to get the game played in our half, and that's when you can really press in behind the play and bring your defensive pressure.
And Jackie Darling kicked 5 goals, was it, in the waffle yesterday, Simo? So how far away is he?
Hopefully he's next week. I think he's pulled up really well. We'll see how he recovers, but you know, we thought it was the best case to get him through. I think he played 80 minutes, so he ticked that box, and he'll be available next week.
Good luck today. Appreciate your time, Adam.
Thanks, boys.
Adam Simpson, West Coast coach, joining us here in the lead-up to the big game here today at Blundstone Arena. Looking forward to it very much indeed. You can hear the wind in the effects of the mic there. Hey, let's talk about the Tigers on Friday night, yeah. Guys. What did you make of them, Jay-Z? You saw them going around, and they just ripped a really good team in really good form to pieces on their home track.
For me, it was the strategy in it, BT, in the sense that they deprived Fremantle of the ball. So for me, they held possession across the back half, chipped the ball, short pass, didn't go long and force the string of turnover, the stoppages where Fremantle's big-bodied midfielders are just so strong. So they deprived the Dockers of the footy for me, and it showed the whole competition, Duck, perhaps the way to beat Fremantle.
I'm not so sure about that. I think they executed that very, very well. And their efficiency was fantastic the other night. And I said to you earlier, BT, I think that was the best game I've seen Richmond play.
Yep.
Best game. So, yep. I'm talking about since I've been retired. I haven't seen them play any better than that. They executed that plan that you were talking about, Jay-Z, perfectly. And Fremantle weren't able to get the ball off them. And more importantly, BT, they nailed their opportunities when they went forward. They and when you kick straight, I mean, if that's 4-4, not, you know, not eight straight goals, Fremantle probably win the game.
Yeah, probably close. I was intrigued because it's the first time I've noticeably seen a team carry out a technical instruction, the way that they play, the way Jay-Z was talking about, where they chip up to the little present-up player in the midfield, two or three chips only, and then a long kick. And what they did is they drew Fremantle closer and closer to protect that little chip ball, and all of a sudden, then Richmond players were able to get out the back.
And, and what was great about it, BT, is that long kick that went to a contest, they had blokes front and square. It was, some of it was basic. That long kick and then front and square goals, they got two or three of those in that first quarter. I mean, it was good, and it was good footy to watch, because when a team's able to execute those skills, I mean, it's good. When you're fumbling and missing targets, it's ugly.
It was an electric start.
And Jack Riewoldt,
I'd career best.
Now, I think Jack right now is playing as good as he's ever played. Now, mightn't be kicking the goals because he's playing further up the ground, but his decision-making and the way he's getting around the ground, I'm loving the way he's playing, Jack. Like I said, he is a team, complete team player now for the Richmond Footy Club.
Yeah, it was a ballistic start. Let's go back to Friday night. Campbell Brown, Barry Denner and BT, the opening quarter. Here's some of the highlights, how it went down.
Around the corner snap, one for the Tigers.
On fire.
Right foot snap from 45. Oh. They're three from three.
Wow.
The Tigers are silencing the Dockers crowd here at Domain Stadium. Deledio comes in and kicks another. They just keep coming here. Grigg on the left boot. Another one. Tigers have got another.
And
Burley, he's got another. They got another.
You can put that down to Pierce. Daniel Pierce.
We got seven. Brownie, I'm sweating. I'm sweating it up, mate. It's so big, I'm sweating.
Seven of the opening eight goals.
Yes, they played well, and it was exciting footy. It was really just so clean and cleansing.
They've had a big
style.
Month, haven't they? First start of their season looked a bit shaky, but last four weeks,
Port, BT, Essendon and Fremantle, all sides that you would put, you know, either middle or above.
Yep.
So are they a serious contender, though, Duck? Do you think Richmond, though, a genuine top four, can have a shot at the preliminary final team?
I don't think they're a top four. No, they're playing some very good footy. Look, I've always said that, you know, we talk about top four and all that sort of stuff, and it's too early in the season. I think there's three sides that certainly fit into that top four: Fremantle, Sydney, and Hawthorn. I think that fourth spot is wide open. So, you know, there are a number of sides that will be lining up for that. Port Adelaide may be out of reach of that. So all of a sudden, that takes one of those out of the equation. But Richmond are in that mix. If they get there, I guess if you get in that top four, you get in the eight, BT. The simple facts are you're a chance.
It.
So are they a chance if they make the eight? Of course they are.
To beat Fremantle over there is just an incredible job. Michael Johnson's 200th. Yes, he got subbed out of the game early with the hamstring. You know, but the strength of their team, their depth at the moment, guys like Mzungu playing in the waffle, playing really well. He's apparently been red hot. Can't get in that team at the moment. Yep. You've got Dawson and Silvani, who are both out injured at the moment. So they're going to add even further depth once they're ready.
But it's going to test them in the short term, that back line, isn't it? When you think that Dawson is out, Silvani's out, Spurs out at the moment. Now they're going to miss Johnson for a month. So there's a window of opportunity,
well,
I think,
over
this
next 2 weeks, I don't think it's going to test them, because they play Gold Coast and then they've got a bye.
Yeah.
So they've been dealt a nice hand in a certain way. Basically, they've got 3 weeks, really, to get those players ready to go.
Maybe they'll look to Alex Pearce or even throw Chris Mayne back, but they're going to have to shuffle the deck chairs a little bit, the Dockers.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks football.